Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is a special in-depth investigative report on America's cult of medical denialism. In this program, we will discuss the American Medical Association, the so-called quackbusters, the skeptics of medicine, scientism, and also Wikipedia and other outlets that disseminate information on these individuals who state that there is only one way of examining a legitimate therapy, and it's their way. We will challenge that. My guest in this series today is a Dr. Peter Glidden, G-L-I-D-D-E-N. He's a licensed naturopathic physician who's been treating patients with botanical protocols and lifestyle changes for almost 30 years. In addition to his medical practice, Dr. Glidden is an author and lectures around the world about the cult of rational science and conventional medical misconceptions that are driving our health into the ditch while Big Pharma gets rich. He is the most widely lecturing naturopath in the United States today and was responsible for getting three states to approve and license naturopathic doctors as primary care physicians. Peter is also a member of the Scientific Advisory Board of Longevity International, which is very interested in the power of herbs and natural foods in helping the body. He is the author of Attempt to Cure with Holistic Medicine, as well as The MD Emperor Has No Clothes. He's a graduate of the University of Massachusetts, received his doctorate in naturopathy from Bastyr University, and website, well, you can go to just his name and get all that you need. Nice to have you with us today, Peter.
Thanks so much, Gary. It's such a pleasure.
I want to begin by focusing on the human disaster that modern conventional medicine has become today. I want to share just a few points to support this conclusion, because what we pride ourselves in doing is real scholarship. Because for decades, a group of individuals, medical doctors, dentists, nurses, nutritionists, dietitians, and psychologists, psychiatrists, have been looking at how you can help a person either prevent or treat a disease, but not just the symptoms, and look at it from a different medical paradigm, one that is not based upon pure orthodoxy and pharmacology, or chemotherapy, or radiation, or surgery. And because of their successes, they have been hounded. The individuals who have been attacked repeatedly and relentlessly by the American Medical Association and its various supporters and people within the quack community include the entire profession of chiropractic, also homeopathy, naturopathy, podiatry, massage therapy, herb therapies, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, all forms of complementary medicine, from ozone to chelation, from intravenous vitamins to diets that are plant-based that help an individual rebalance or biochemistry, body-mind medicine, all of the work done by thousands of scientists and clinicians, published in peer-reviewed journals by the thousands of articles, for example, in the areas of psychological behavior, manifesting disease, and psychoneuroimmunology, all of these have been dismissed out of hand. Going further, the spokespersons for orthodox medicine have sought to attack individuals personally, destroying their reputations, and by extension, destroying the entire respect for a whole field of endeavor. The average American, wanting to know, does a therapy work, would reasonably go to what historically have been respected as a open source encyclopedia, edited by more than 120,000 editors, and that would be Wikipedia. And on health, they would see that everything I just mentioned has been denigrated. Additionally, individuals have been denigrated. So then what is the likelihood that that person would want to experience naturopathy or herbology or homeopathy if they were told it doesn't work? Not only does it not work, it's preventing you from using accepted therapies that do work. Therefore, it's irresponsible. It's quackery. And so I would imagine that the vast majority of people, not having personal experience in the field, would then seek another therapy, probably another orthodox therapy. What we never do in the United States is we never ask the people who are telling us we know best, what are your results? Our program is going to be devoted to looking at the history of how these individuals came to power, looking at the actual science, have they been right or wrong more often than not, and what are some of the more egregious examples of them being wrong, and what would have happened had a holistic medical doctor, a holistic nurse made the same mistakes, causing the same number of injuries or deaths that they have caused. I wrote a seminal paper. It took 5 years. There were only MDs and PhDs on the group. It was not a part-time effort. We spent thousands, tens of thousands of hours doing the research, only using mainstream orthodox medicine's own statistics. As a result, if they were going to be angry about our outcome, they had to be angry at themselves. They had to look in the mirror because we were only using their figures. And what we calculated, even conservatively, was that the number one cause of death and injury in the United States every year for the past 40 years has been orthodox medicine. On a good year, where they're not killing a whole lot of people, it's over 500,000 people dead, over 10 million injured. On a normal year, it's anywhere from 700,000 up to 1 million dead. If you took the most conservative figures and you looked over the past, let's say, if you're just looking even for the past 30 years, if you were to take an average figure of 600,000, which is far more than that, and you multiply it times the last 30 years, you're at 18 million dead, over 200 million injured. Now, wouldn't you think that if any industry, any group, any governmental agency, any person caused the death, unnecessary death, of 18 million individuals, there would be some concern somewhere. A federal agency would look into it. Probably the Health and Human Resources that oversees the National Cancer Institute and all of the CDC and the FDA, National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, National Institutes of Mental Health. Surely someone in there would be interested. No one is. Maybe a federal prosecutor, the Justice Department, never happened. Then maybe the AMA, they found that the death by medicine was the third leading cause, but they weren't using all the statistics. They weren't accounting for bed sores. In 1 year, 88,000 Americans died of bed sores. They weren't calculating people dying of infections in hospitals. They weren't calculating malnutrition deaths. So their science, their scholarship was wanting. But still, even they had it as third leading cause. So then what is the question? The question is, did someone say we are doing an awful lot wrong? About 88% of medicine does not work. It actually is harmful. And about 12% does work and saves lives. I acknowledge what does work in emergency medicine. But I must also be honest and acknowledge what does not. And yet, these same individuals had the temerity to accuse people of being quacks and charlatans and frauds and pseudoscientific and doing worthless work when their patients, the ones they were attacking, were actually getting better. Where people were going to chiropractics with lower back pain and getting out and working half as fast as a person on traditional medications. They were not killing people. They were saving lives. And the American media, from the New York Times to CNN, embassy, the entire American media would support these individuals, but not those saving lives. That is very Orwellian. So that's where we found ourselves. When the death by medicine was completed and verified in accuracy, it was sent to 7,000 publications all the major scientific journals, all the major agencies of government, not one single person replied. Not to condemn it, not to say it's not true. They simply tried to make it as if it didn't exist. But it does. That brings us to our discussion and your interest in this topic by starting by giving us a history of how did these people get to be so powerful that no one challenges them, that for 50 years, all the holistic practitioners are always evading any conflict, any confrontation, and even defending themselves. Everybody is cowering before this onslaught of assault that is unending. The forum is yours.
Well, not me. But it's a point well taken, Gary. You know, the best place to hide something is in plain sight. Leading cause of death in the United States, MD-directed medical therapeutics. Leading cause of bankruptcy, MD-directed medical therapeutics. And while the medical doctors have been in exclusive control over the development and the delivery of medicine since 1912, by the way, chronic illness is escalating. Alzheimer's has risen out of nowhere. Now it's the sixth leading cause of death. Some people say it's the fifth, depending on how you crunch the numbers. Autism, the numbers are off the charts. When I was born in the 1950s, there were approximately 1 out of 10,000 children were autistic. Now it's 1 out of 50. Heart disease. Just as many people are getting heart disease now as they did before we started spending $25 billion a year on cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. By the way, there's no relationship between cholesterol and heart disease. Obesity is a national tragedy. 30%, conservatively, 30% of Americans, that includes children and adults, are not just overweight, but they're obese. Type 2 diabetes is out of control, and all of these things have happened while the medical doctors have been in exclusive control over the development and the delivery of medicine. I guess the fellow who said it was correct. It's good to be the king, because when you are the king, you can do whatever you want to, and even when your therapeutics fail, even when your therapeutics harm, even when your therapeutics bankrupt, and even when your therapeutics kill, the medical doctors get a pass, for goodness sakes. Vioxx, famous pain-killing medication, fast-tracked by the Food and Drug Administration in the, I think it was in the late 90s. Conservative estimates are it killed 60,000 people. It killed 60,000 people. That's just one drug. Can you imagine what would happen if one chiropractor or one naturopath or one homeopath gave one patient one botanical medicine and they died? There would be an outrage. There would be congressional inquiries, and we would all be pilloried in the town square, because for over 100 years, we have been socialized by a propaganda campaign, which Joseph Goebbels would be proud of, to believe that the medical doctors, the MDs, have the secret decoder ring to all things medical. And if the MDs can't figure it out, then nobody can, because the MDs are the only people that practice medicine. Everybody else practices alternative medicine, which is basically quackery. It's back of the bus, dangerous, substandard, unscientific, and all of that, of course, is a lie. But that is exactly what we have been socialized to believe, and it all started in the early, 1901, more or less. In 1901, the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research was founded. Simon Flexner was on the board of directors. Simon's brother, Abraham, was on the staff of the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. In 1904, the American Medical Association created the Council for Medical Education. They wanted to develop standards of medical education, but they couldn't afford it. Enter Henry Pritchett, the president of the Carnegie Foundation. He offered to take over the Council of Medical Education, and for a price, he did. Pritchett then sent Abraham Flexner in 1905 around the country to take an inventory of the 155 medical schools in existence at the time. Flexner did this. It took him 5 years. And he came back in 1910 with his infamous Flexner Report. And the Flexner Report ginned up fear amongst unsuspecting Americans, because Abraham Flexner painted the chiropractors and the homeopaths and the naturopaths and everybody who didn't practice allopathic MD-directed pharmaceutical-centrist medicines as dangerous. And they strong-armed, they used the American Medical Association, called upon the strong arm of government to help them corner the market on medicine, and that is what they wanted to do. They did not want to protect American citizens and increase health safety. They wanted to corner the market on American medical medicine, and they did. They used the Flexner Report to gin up a public outcry against quack medicine, blah, 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 and they convinced Congress in 1912. In 1912, the American Medical Association convinced Congress that they were the only organization fit to license doctors. And so, in the United States, in 1912, the American Medical Association was granted exclusive control over the development and the delivery of medicine, and they effectively kicked everybody else off of the bus of medicine. Furthermore, after that, the American Medical Association then established a knowledge monopoly by introducing Latin into medical education. And this effectively took medical education out of the hands of the layperson, making it medicine seem mysterious, and medicine seems, oh, it's very, very complicated, and only the medical student, only the medical doctor can possibly hope to understand this. And this is the meme, this is the mind worm that is so ensconced in our minds that even when these people fail us, even when they harm us, even when they kill us, even when they bankrupt us, we keep genuflecting at their altar. We give them a pass, and we give them more money. And by the way, this is where the term alternative medicine came from. Alternative is somewhat a derogatory term. I'm a licensed naturopathic physician. I've been practicing medicine in primary care situations for nearly 30 years. I don't practice alternative medicine. Saying that what I do or what a chiropractor does or what an herbalist does or what an Ayurvedic practitioner does is alternative is like saying, well, the only real dog is a German Shepherd, and every other dog is an alternative dog. It's nonsense. We wouldn't put up with that type of thought, but we do put up with that when it comes to medicine. Now, you know, my profession is licensed and regulated, and when I graduated in 1991 and became licensed to practice medicine, I think there were six states that licensed and regulated naturopathic medicine. Now there are 20. But this speaks to the further, right, the monopolization of the medical marketplace. So does this mean that the laws of science and the laws of nature change if you cross a state border? No. The only reason that this absurd political situation exists is because of the medical monopoly, which has been in place for so long now that most people are completely unaware that it's a monopoly. They have no idea. And furthermore, for the last nail in this coffin of complete, utter, and total socialization, we have been convinced that the medical doctors practice medicine. Now, you might be interested to know that nobody practices medicine. Medicine is like a big umbrella under which hang many disciplines. Your medical doctor may be the nicest person that God ever created, but your medical doctor does not practice medicine. Your medical doctor practices allopathic medicine. I practice naturopathic medicine. There's chiropractic medicine, homeopathic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Allopathic medicine is what the MDs are brought up inside of. It is a medical discipline founded upon Newtonian physics. And Newtonian physics argues that if it can't be measured, it doesn't exist. So therefore, since nobody's ever dissected the soul or the spirit or the vital force out of the human body, since nobody's seen it with an X-ray or a CT scan or an MRI, it doesn't exist. So if it doesn't exist, it doesn't exist. Therefore, it might interest you to know, it might horrify you to know, that your medical doctor, being trained inside of the allopathic medical philosophy, believes that the human body is a bag of biochemicals waiting to break, that consciousness itself is a function of biochemistry. God is a fiction. There's no such thing as life after death. There's no such thing as the soul. There's no such thing as the spirit. When the body dies, it's lights out, game over. And interestingly, it's not the medical doctor's job to cure anything. This isn't because medical doctors are sadistic. It's because of their training in allopathic reductionism. Allopathic reductionism argues that the body is a bag of biochemicals waiting to break, and when something does go wrong, it's not the doctor's job to fix it. It's not the MD's job to fix it. It's the MD's job to manage it. So heartburn is not cured, it's managed. Blood pressure is not cured, it's managed. Migraine headaches, not cured, managed. Asthma, not cured, managed. The only conditions that allopathic reductionistic pharmaceutical centrist medicine cures are infections. And those are starting with antibiotics. And those are starting to fail us. Antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections are the next plague that's going to sweep across the planet and brought to you again by the medical doctors. But my point here is, your medical doctor does not practice medicine. They practice allopathic medicine. And allopathic medicine is fantastic for trauma care, surgery when it's necessary, and a handful of infectious diseases. But for everything else, it's horrible, because it is based upon a medical philosophy which is inconsistent with the reality of the human experience. And yet, because allopathic medicine is the existing prevailing monopoly, backed by legendary amounts of pharmaceutical money, political power, you are not being told the truth about the ineffectiveness, on the one hand, of allopathic medicine for the treatment of chronic disease, and you have no idea of the effectiveness of science-based, clinically verified, naturopathic medical therapeutics. You have no idea. And in the back of your mind, let's be honest, you think that, oh, those chiropractors, they've got to be quacks. Oh, those naturopaths, because you look around. The only medicine practiced in your hospital is MD-directed medicine. The only medicine your insurance pays for is MD-directed medicine. The only medicine they make TV shows about is MD-directed medicine. The only medicine they do research about at your local university is MD-directed medicine. Therefore, you think the medical doctors must be better at what they do than everybody else. That's a logical conclusion. But the only reason, again, the only reason that the medical doctors are everywhere all of the time is because they legislated themselves there. They orchestrated a hostile takeover of the medicine in 1912, long before most people listening to this broadcast were alive. And because of this overt, unbelievable, sanctimonious, unapologetic monopolization of the medical marketplace, when the medical doctors screw up, they get a pass. And when they lie about the competition, they get a pass. For goodness sakes, are you aware that in the 1980s, the American Medical Association was fined? I think it was $10 million. Don't quote me on that. They were found guilty in federal court of promoting a 10-year slander campaign against the chiropractors. Found guilty. And did anybody go to jail? Was anybody shut down? No. They were fined $10 million. And that's what happens. Again, it's good to be the king. And, you know, thank God for people like Dr. Null standing up on the mountain and waving the flag of truth. Because honest to God, ladies and gentlemen, after doing practicing naturopathic medicine, licensed naturopathic medicine in primary care settings for the last 30 years, more or less, I'm here to tell you that your body's ability to fix itself is much greater than anybody has led you to believe. And you probably would not believe the things that I and my colleagues have seen people recover from. And okay, because of the monopoly, you're not going to have, you know, mainstream access to this information. And it's a crying shame.
Let's take a few examples of where mainstream medicine has failed miserably but is not held accountable. Let's start with cancer. They have had a war on cancer for 45 years. I've had an opportunity to go down and speak with the head of the National Cancer Institute. I also spoke with Dr. Dean Burke, its leading scientist, one of the leading scientists and founders. And Burke said, we have failed using chemotherapy and radiation for most cancers. There's only a few cancers, clear cell adenomas and testicular cancer, that we have succeeded with, but the majority we do not succeed. And the interesting part, when you're looking at what they claim are their success rates, if you have been given any therapy whatsoever and you had cancer, they take 100% of the credit if you survive. They do not look at your immune system, what you've done, whether you've changed your diet, whether you have changed your mindset, you're happy. Nothing else that you do matters. It's 100% their call. And that's not science. That is quackery. Take us through the paradigm when it comes to understanding cancer.
Well, the results, in keeping, of course, with the allopathic methodology, and let's be honest, I mean, the medical doctors, right, all the conditions that I quoted before, heart disease, asthma, or arthritis, type 2 diabetes, autism, Alzheimer's disease, all of these things are getting worse because the medical doctors aren't trained how to cure these things. They're not trained how to cure these things. Let me say it once more. Your medical doctor may be the nicest person that God ever created, but their training does not engender them to think about how to cure illnesses. They're simply there to manage them with drugs and surgery. So here comes cancer, right? So when you look at the human body, there's no soul force, there's no spirit, there's, you know, it's just a bag of biochemicals waiting to break. You see somebody, they have a tumor. So the treatment strategy for the allopathic reductionist is to remove the tumor. But keep in mind, the tumor is not the disease. The tumor is the result of the disease. So when you simply destroy the tumor by surgically removing it, burning it with radiation, or attempting to dissolve it with chemotherapy, even if you're successful at removing the tumor, you are unsuccessful at getting to the root cause of the illness. So what happens? It comes back. And this is the biggest problem with cancer. It's the return rate. You can eliminate the tumor for most types of cancer for a couple of months, but then it comes back. And when it comes back in gangbusters. And their failures are so biblical when it comes to cancer that I forget how many years ago. I think it was about 15 years ago. Again, don't quote me on that. The American Cancer Society stopped even thinking about the word cure. Now, all of their statistics are couched inside of this five-year survivorship language. So inside of this new academic paradigm, if you're a cancer patient, you have a definitive diagnosis of cancer, you undergo conventional cancer treatment, and you die from cancer 5 years and 1 day after your cancer treatment, that goes into the books as a successful treatment. Because when cancer doctors talk to cancer patients about cancer, it's always inside of this five-year survivorship paradigm. Small cell lung cancer survival rate, 96%. This according to the Center for Disease Control, by the way. 96% are dead on year five. Ovarian cancer, 67% are dead by year five. Pancreatic cancer, don't even talk to me about pancreatic cancer. 98% are dead by year five. Prostate cancer, 79% dead by year five. Rectal cancer, 81% dead by year five. Stomach cancer, 98% dead by year five. And so forth and so on. There are 10 questions, by the way, that every cancer patient should ask their oncologist in the presence of a witness and a recording device. Question number one, doctor, what causes my cancer? Oh, it's genetic. If a medical doctor tells you that your condition is genetic, you know, you should see that as a red herring. That's like saying, well, tornadoes are horrible and we need to find out what's causing tornadoes. What causes tornadoes? Well, it's sunlight that causes tornadoes. Can't have a tornado without a cloud. Can't have a cloud without sunlight. So it's sunlight that causes tornadoes. This is the genetic scapegoat, the red herring that medical doctors float in order to make people feel intellectually inferior. If a medical professional asks you or tells you that your condition is genetic, you should say, really, doctor, that's fascinating. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Which gene is it and on which chromosome? Thank you very much. They won't be able to answer it. Question two, will your treatment cure my cancer? There's a good question. If it won't cure it, then what can I expect your treatment to do? What are the side effects going to be? How are you going to treat the side effects? Can your treatment give me cancer? One of life's greatest ironies. Many chemotherapeutic treatments and radiation cause cancer. What percentage? I'd like to know, doctor. Thank you very much. Also, doctor, I'd like to know, please, because, look, I'm a businessman, and I understand that you're a businessman also. I'm shopping for the best bang for my buck. So I know that this question might make you uncomfortable, but I need to ask it because I'm attempting to secure the best deal for my money. How much money will you make from my treatment of cancer, personally? How much money is the hospital going to make? I need to know these numbers. And lastly, will you give me the names of five patients you treated with this type of cancer and that are alive for more than 5 years? I'd really like to call them up. I'd like to see what their experience has been like. I'd like to see what has happened to the quality of their life. I'd like information, firsthand information from a patient who has the same type of cancer that you've diagnosed me with. You're encouraging me to get that treatment. I need information. This is science-based, clinically verified, is it not? I need information before I'm going to proceed. Again, I've had patients, you know, tell me that they asked their oncologist these questions. They were kicked out of the doctor's office, or the doctor just got up and left. Which begs the question, well, by the way, we need not overlook this little chestnut. If you go to a medical doctor with, for instance, an asthmatic condition, which, by the way, is usually easily gotten on the other side of with omega-3 essential fatty acid supplementation, by the way. But if you have asthma and your doctor prescribes Advair or some type of bronchodilator pharmaceutical agent, the medical doctor gets no piece of that pie. There's no kickback from the prescription of that medicine, right? You go to the pharmacy and you pick it up. But that's not how it is with chemo. If your oncologist prescribes you chemo, he gets or she gets a percentage. So here's kind of how it goes. The oncologist buys the chemotherapeutic drug for $2,000. They charge you $10,000 for it, and the hospital and the oncologist split the profits. It is the only type of prescription medicine that the prescribing physician gets an active percentage of. And this is one of the major reasons why inside of the medical monopoly, remember, it's good to be the king, failed therapeutics such as this continue to be rolled out because it's a gigantic cash cow. And you know, with the medical doctors, it's always double blind this and double blind that, and let's publish it, ladies and gentlemen, and prove it. Here is an abstract that was published in 2004 in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. The contribution of cytotoxic chemotherapy to 5-year survival in adult malignancies. These guys looked at the 5-year survival benefit due to chemotherapy of over 22 different types of cancer for cancer patients registered in Australia and in the United States for 1988. They looked at all of this data. It was a meta-analysis of all of the published data. How effective was chemotherapy? And here's what was published in 2004, 14 years ago. You're sitting down. You want to put a belt on, a seat belt on, and put a heavy book on your head. The overall contribution of curative cytotoxic chemotherapy to 5-year survival in adults was estimated to be 2.3% in Australia and 2.1% in the United States. To justify the continued funding and availability of cytotoxic chemotherapy, a rigorous evaluation of the cost effectiveness is urgently required. And this was published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. So, if the medical doctors are all about the scientific method, then why has chemotherapy not been less and less and less and less prescribed? Because that's what the research shows. It's because of the medical monopoly and the gigantic money. And, you know, Dr. Null, Gary Null, really needs to be applauded for the work that he did with the study that he did, laying all of this information out to the public. And it speaks to the gigantic socialization that has happened here in the last 100 years. Chemotherapy doesn't work. Conventional treatment for cancer doesn't work. Conventional treatment for most of the conditions that most people go to the doctor for doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's a failed methodology. It's great if you have a bullet in your arm, heaven forbid. It's pretty good if you get your leg blown off in Iraq, heaven forbid. It's pretty good if you're T-boned in the intersection and you've got a triple compound fracture of your leg. They can help you with that. But for most of the things that most people go to the doctor for most of the time, allopathic, reductionistic, pharmaceutical, centrist medicine is a failed methodology. And the only reason that it is still rolled out is because of the money. But don't get me started.
Okay. Now let's take another look at some figures. And, of course, it would be good to cite some of these studies. For example, I have used the figure 700,000, which is a conservative figure. Others, such as a recent report from Johns Hopkins University, used that 250,000, over 100,000 people died from prescription drugs last year, and 22,000 were prescribed synthetic opiates. Now, here's where we have to parse the issue. On the one hand, they failed and are rewarded, even when their patients die from opiate overdose and they could have given them more natural treatments for pain. Those doctors, including board-certified pain management specialist, one who I recently spoke with, and his wife is a board-certified oncologist from Sloan Kettering, who came together, and I spoke with them at length, and I said, why are you here? Why did you come? And they said, because we need another way of helping our patients. We're just maintaining them on drugs until they die. We're not seeing any reversals. So the American media will never give credit, ever, and hasn't, for any form of natural or non-traditional or conventional therapy, no matter what evidence you present. So nothing you do will ever convince them. They say publish in peer-reviewed journals. There's hundreds of thousands of studies of natural approaches on just supplements alone. There's over 3,000 studies on plant-based diets, including those from Loma Linda University, on the power of a vegetarian diet. They don't care. So no matter what evidence you present, the skeptics and the quackbusters and Wikipedia will not give you credit for the right things that are proven by any reasonable standard of science-based medicine.
That's on because it's level, a cult. These people exist inside of a cult. And they pretend to wrap themselves, you know, in the cape of science. And the irony is that they only lean on the science when the science affirms their particular position. And when the science argues for something other than their particular position, they disregard it completely. And there's a psychological term for this. It's called cognitive dissonance.
Let me give you a specific study.
Right, the inability to entertain a new idea, which is in direct opposition to old ideas. And this is why, you know, one of my favorite scientists of all time, Max Planck, the guy that discovered quantum physics, Max Planck said science progresses one funeral at a time, which means that the old guard has to die out before the ideas of the new guard can be accepted, even when the ideas of the new guard are scientifically proven. And this is one of life's greatest ironies, that the medical doctors, the people who are in charge of the development and delivery of medicine, are often the least scientific of the least objectively scientific people on the bus. And, you know, well, because everybody's scared of the medical doctors, they never question it.
I'm going to give you an example of this. Just a year and a half ago, the most comprehensive study by the National Center for Health Research concluded that antidepressant drugs were contributing to the suicide epidemic in the United States. The Nordic Cochrane Review had similar findings in Europe. And from a Scientific American article, quote, half of what physicians do is wrong. Quote, less than 20% of what physicians do has solid research to support it, end quote. Quote, although these claims sound absurd, they are solidly supported by research that is largely agreed upon by experts. Yet these claims are rarely discussed publicly, end quote. Now, mind you, that is from mainstream science criticizing itself. There are hundreds of articles where conscientious scientists take an honest look at some part of medicine and say the peer review system is flawed. Ghostwriting by articles by the pharmaceutical industry, cherry picking data, manipulating statistics, fraud, it's rampant. And yet, even the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, one of our most prestigious medical journals, Dr. Angel, now a professor at Harvard, she was an editor-in-chief for 22 years at the New England Journal of Medicine, concluded that there was corruption within medicine and in the scientific community that was not being addressed. There's a quote from the New England Journal of Medicine, quote, in America, there is no guarantee that any individual will receive high-quality care for any particular health problem. The healthcare industry is plagued with overutilization of services, underutilization of services, and errors in healthcare practice, end quote. That's from the New England Journal of Medicine. Yet how many physicians changed how they saw a patient because of that, or how many people in the media challenged the medicine because it's doing the wrong thing? So after hearing these statistics and taking an honest look at the healthcare conventional medicine provides, why is there so little to show it has been a success minimally, and we should continue doing the same thing over and over again, they claim? Please address these. At the same time, the second most popular form of medical practice in the United States is chiropractic. And chiropractors now can and do encourage people in diet and exercise and stress management, and they're not given credit. No one is given credit for anything you do that helps a patient if it's outside of this reductionistic, rigid scientism, and which is based upon the skeptics of science-based medicine, where I do not support science-based medicine. I support evidence-based medicine.
Right.
And the difference is this. Evidence-based medicine takes a look at what your claim is and then says, prove it. And you have a very high standard that you have to prove. And the ultimate proof is that someone will be able to take what you're claiming and apply it in their practice and come up with similar results as have you. Then you have shown that what you did is applicable across the board. Yet science-based medicine will use one example of this, and I'll just use one. You use chemotherapy. You mentioned Vioxx, and by the way, the low number on Vioxx is 60,000. It has been reevaluated up to 500,000, 500,000 dead. The company paid a $5 billion fine. The value of its stock went up the day that it paid its fine. Nobody went to jail, and they didn't have to withdraw the product. It was a voluntary withdrawal, and from 1999 until it was the whole issue was settled. And the man who was Dr. Graham at the FDA saw the bad science, tried to warn the FDA, and they went after him, and so he could not tell the truth. And yet they profited, knowing full well that their product was defective. That is a medicine. Now, were they condemned? Was the pharmaceutical house condemned by all of medicine and the medical community? No, it was not. I did the following. I hired two lawyers, and I gave them a task. Over the next 6 months to a year, using LexisNexis and other legal resources, I want you to get me every lawsuit filed against and settled by any pharmaceutical company. And they did every company. And it was up into the hundreds of thousands of lawsuits that they settled. And many times they were repeat offenders. Now, did any of these companies go broke? Was their charter to do business taken away since they had engaged in malice aforethought that had caused death and injury? No. They simply paid a fine. In one case, one of the drugs, Vioxx, had earned about $22 billion. And so by paying $5 billion, they were still left with over $17 billion in profit. That's just the cost of doing business, but it's very profitable. They factor in their profit margins, if we get sued and we have to do settlements, how much can we afford? It's not personal with them. Nobody loses a night's sleep. And yet, where they're not condemned, where no one who headed the company, who knew this was going on, didn't lose the job, got a promotion. Why didn't the media excoriate them? Because, as you mentioned earlier, if any chiropractic, naturopath, holistic dentist injured 10 patients, not even killed them, injured them, it would be front page news. Killing him, that person would have gone to jail. Killing 18 million? Yeah, that's genocide. So we've intentionally engaged in what you just commented on, cognitive disconnect, where we're not paying attention to the reality of our choices, and the American public is caught into it by being propagandized and respecting only authority leaders, only believing in one system and only one power group, and no one else can compete. So we talk about freedom of choice, yet we don't have it when it comes to healthcare in our society. We don't have it when it comes to vaccines. And then look at one good example of absolute quackery, complete fraud, synthetic hormone replacement therapy. I even debated Jocelyn Elders on PBS nationally on this very topic when she was Surgeon General. The question is synthetic hormone replacement therapy effective and safe? The answer, it is neither. Yes, it can turn off some hot flashes and help prevent osteoporosis, but at the same time, you end up getting heart attacks, strokes, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, dementia, and colorectal cancer. Six major killers. And you could use Vitex. You could use at least 12 different things to prevent hot flashes. And yet for over 40 years, medicine has refused to stop using it, even though there's a 13% adverse effect rate and 10 million women using it. That's 1.3 million women we're sacrificing on the altar of medical hubris every year. And yet no journal will write against it. No magazine, no 60 Minutes, no 2020, no Dateline. And over 900,000 physicians will not challenge it. And behind all this is the American Medical Association. And then from there, the state medical boards and the accrediting agencies, it's all one giant cult. Give us some examples. And if you just tuned in, we have Dr. Peter Glidden on right now. Give us examples of the American Medical Association's total power and control over the entire medical paradigm in our country.
Well, you know, I mean, everything that you said, you know, as above, so below, it the same thing was happening in World War II. Four German pharmaceutical companies in World War II banded together and they bought a concentration camp. And they did human experiments on the inmates of the concentration camps. They also made the inmates of the concentration camps make the Xylon B gas that killed everybody in the concentration camps. They made them manufacture it. And at the end of the war, they all got a pass. And we imported them into the United States through Operation Paperclip. And, you know, we gave them visas and we made them American citizens and we welcomed them into the conventional practice of medicine. And Wilhelm Reich, who was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud's, was of the opinion that there is a certain classification or a certain kind of emotionally undeveloped human being. And that depending on how you were raised when you were a child, and you know whether it was an easy childhood and a supportive and a loving house that you grew up in, or a very hard childhood and a very aggressive, paternalistic house that you grew up in, a lot of sexual dysfunction in the way that children are raised and developed, that those people then as adults became emotionally armored, and they were not, you know, good examples of a well-rounded human being. And these people all were suffering from a significant psychological pathology. And it's these people, for whatever reason, that gravitate towards the practice of medicine. Because you have to wonder to yourself, I mean, what kind of a human being is able to sleep at night understanding that the drug that they just recommended or prescribed killed somebody, and it was because of their lack of due diligence, their lazy scientific ethos that made that happen? What type of a person is actively going to aggressively denigrate everybody who doesn't do it their way without looking at the facts? Just say, oh, you're a quack. You're practicing substandard medicine. Why? Because I say so. What type of a person would do that? I wouldn't do that. You know, well-rounded human beings would not do that. So I am of the opinion that humanity, you know, in the 19th, 20th, and the 21st century, we have a majority of adults now who are, you know, less than they're psychologically maladjusted, for lack of a better term. And that these are the people that gravitate towards science, and they actually take pleasure in asserting themselves over everybody else, and they use, you know, the science to wrap themselves in the flag, right? And see, this is a problem, but because they're everywhere all the time and because of the monopoly, we let them get away with it. Now, the light in all of this darkness, Gary, there is light in all of this darkness. You know, my profession, the naturopathic medical profession, we were the redheaded stepchild in the 80s that nobody wanted to recognize, and nobody knew how to pronounce naturopathy, let alone know what it does. And now, you know, hey, we're licensed in 20 states in the United States. Naturopathic medical doctors can prescribe drugs. We can admit to hospitals. Insurance pays for some stuff that we do sometimes. And it's a rapidly growing system of medicine, and that's a great thing. The only reason that the chiropractors, the naturopaths, the acupuncturists, the herbalists, and everybody else, the only reason that we survive in such an unbelievably hostile political and academic environment is because we get results. Now, you know, in a free medical market, if by some genie-in-the-bottle magic everybody woke up tomorrow and there were just as many licensed naturopathic doctors as medical doctors, just as many licensed Ayurvedic practitioners, acupuncturists, traditional Chinese medical doctors as medical doctors, if insurance paid for everything equally, and if universities did equal amounts of research on naturopathic therapeutics, homeopathic therapeutics, chiropractic therapeutics as they did allopathic therapeutics, if there was a free medical market within 5 years, if that, medical doctors, MDs, practicing general family practice medicine and cancer treatment would be out of a job. Because in a free medical market, people would gravitate towards what works, right?
Peter, I have some closing thoughts I want to share with our audience. First, we must draw a distinction between the real medicine, by definition, compared to allopathic medicine, which is what our federal agencies, most medical schools, and the private medical industrial complex promote. Also, the pharmaceutical industry and the professional medical institutes control Washington. Last year, the drug makers spent $240 million on lobbying. The insurance industry spent $157 million, and the AMA alone spent $21.5 million. Yet our health care costs are 18% of the nation's gross domestic product. Also, there was an article in The Atlantic, which is a mainstream magazine, that was entitled The Triumph of New Age Medicine. And it started by saying that modern medicine has long decried acupuncture, naturopathy, and homeopathy as dangerous nonsense that preys upon the gullible. However, many doctors are now admitting that alternative medicine seems to do a better job in treating their patients and at much lower cost than conventional medicine. By the way, the article noted the failures of allopathic medicine in treating chronic disease. Obviously, the Atlantic article was viciously attacked. But one assault caught my attention. It was printed in Forbes magazine, the flagship of corporate profits. The guy wrote, quote, saying, "We're not making strides against heart disease and cancer is just, well, wrong." Okay, really? Here's the game they play. The CDC statistics have no way of determining how much decline there is in cancer or heart disease because people being motivated by what they read and hear and share of how to live a healthier life, exercising, stress management, a plant-based diet, proper supplementation, that means a lot. That's what prevents disease. Instead, any decline, orthodox medicine takes 100% of the credit for when there is absolutely no science anywhere showing that their treatments are the reduction in this. Also, the establishment feels threatened by alternative medicine, and rightly so. 42 of our major medical schools, including Harvard, Yale, Duke, University of California, San Francisco, the Mayo Clinic, have integrated educational departments teaching alternative medical modalities. Nevertheless, what we have to understand is they're going to say that, quote, everything is written by evolution into our genetic code, end quote. I say nonsense. You show me a person that you claim is genetically programmed to have a disease, and I'll show you how lifestyle intervention in a positive way can change that genetic code and make that insignificant. They're not willing to look at that because they're monotheistic. They're locked into a single paradigm. And the mainstream media, the mainstream television networks, the New York Times and the Post, the Internet, particularly Wikipedia, is a cesspool, in my opinion, of misinformation about health. If we can control the vehicle, the message, if we can pursue and fool anyone, that's what they're claiming, and they succeed. But for this to be effective as it is, it requires a huge network of entities working together. So I would like to target the American Medical Association and other allies in the government, private industry, and other medical institutions, and in my opinion, that have usurped the services of the skeptic organizations and science-based medicine Wikipedia, similar as they earlier recruited the people who then do their dirty work. So I believe that we're turning a corner. I just believe that we have to get all the people who have benefited from alternative practice and more natural practice to join together and raise their voices as well. Peter, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Gary, it's my pleasure. Keep up the good work.
And that is our guest on today's program, and he is Dr. Peter Glidden, G-L-I-D-D-E-N. And this is a continuation of a series that I'm doing, and this was The Cult of Medical Denialism in America. Thank you all for listening, and have a good day.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.